Mem Tes Amar Aleph, or at the end of the 12th line of the Gemara. So the Gemara says, Rav Kahana, Yohavu Leizuze Akitna, Lesof Iyakar Kidna. There were some prospective buyers who were going to purchase linen or flax from Rav Kahana. They paid him the money, and then before they had a chance to come pick up the linen, the price of flax, the price of linen increased. Asa lekame derav amar le b'maydin akitas zuze havlu v'idach dvarim ninu udvarim ein bahen misha mechusri amana de'itmar dvarim rav amar ein bahen misha mechusri amana v'rabbi Yochanan amar yesh bahen misha mechusri amana. So Rav told Rav Kahana the following. He said, the value that the buyers already paid to you. Let's say they already paid you $500, and at the time they paid it to you, that was the full value of the linen. Now the price of linen has doubled. Now it's $1,000 for the full amount. So you have to give them half. In other words, you give them commensurate to whatever the current market value of linen is in terms of the remainder of the linen. So that was a mere verbal commitment. And according to Rav, reneging or recanting on a mere verbal commitment does not constitute bad faith. The Gemara says this is a machlokas between Rav and Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan says that backing out of a verbal commitment, even when there's no kinyan, that's still considered to be an act of bad faith. And Rav disagrees. Rav says, no, that it's just a verbal commitment. There's no teeth to it, and therefore backing out of it is not considered acting in bad faith. So asks the Gemara Meisvei, Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda, Omer, Ma Talmud, Lomar, Hin Sedek, Vahalo, Hin Bechlal, Eifa Haya. The Gemara raises the following question. The Pasuk in Parshas Kedoshim describes the mitzvah to use honest and just weight. The Pasuk says, Eifas Tzedek, Vahin Tzedek Yelach. You have to have an honest Eifa, an honest Hin. So the question is that a hin is a smaller measurement than an eifa. So if the Torah requires that your eifas have to be just, so then kal v'chomer, your hins also have to be just. Why does the pasuk feel it necessary to specify that the hins also have to be just and honest weights? So the Gemara says, Ela lomer lecha sheyehe hin sholchat tzedek v'lav sholchat tzedek. Rabbi Yosi or Rabbi Yehuda interprets the pasuk metaphorically, that the word hin is interpreted as if it was the word hin, that your hins and your lavs, your yeses and your nos, have to be just and honest, which is another way of saying that a person has to keep their promises. So how could Rav tell Rav Kahana that it's no big deal to back out of the verbal commitment and just recant on the other half of the linen that you agreed to sell to the buyers? Isn't that a violation of this idea of hin tzedek, that your promises have to be kept? So the Gemara says, not true.
Why are we referring to this as a verbal commitment? They put down a deposit.
But once they came to pick up the linen, the price had doubled, right? So now the money that they had initially put down that was meant to cover, let's say, the full value or whatever it was, maybe even half the value, now it's only going to cover a quarter of the value. So in other words, Rav said to Rav Kahana, you have to give them whatever the amount they put down is commensurate to the current market value, but now the buyers want to buy the rest of the linen too. So he says, in terms of that, there's no issue recanting. There's no issue reneging on that part because it was just a verbal commitment in terms of the rest of it. So the question is, okay, but isn't there still a problem on backing out of a verbal commitment? Why is that not a violation of hin tzedek? So the Gemara says, not true. Amar Abaye, hahu shelo yedaber echad bapeh ve'echad baliv. Abaye rejects this contention because Abaye understands that pasuk in Kedoshim of hin tzedek to mean something different. That means that I can't make a commitment for something that I know from the outset I'm not going to live up to. Rav Kahana had no idea that the market value of linen was going to double at the time that he sold the linen. That wasn't on his radar screen. So it's not considered to be illegitimate for him to recant on the other part of the linen. Okay, then the Gemara says, Meisvei, Reb Shimon Omer, Afal Pisha Amru Talis Kona Dinar Zahav, Ve'ein Dinar Zahav Kona Talis, Mikol Makon Kach Halacha, Aval Amru Misha Para Me'anshe Dora Mabalu Me'anshe Dora Flaga, Hu Asid Li Para Mimi She'eno Omid B'diburo. We've referenced the statement of Reb Shimon already a few times this week. This is a mission that we saw a couple of days ago, where Reb Shimon makes the following observation. Let's say, for example, Reuven is attempting to purchase a garment from Shimon. He's going to pay him a gold coin, and that gold coin is going to effectuate the transaction. He's going to acquire the talis. So Reb Shimon tells us that when you do the meshicha, when you pull on the talis, you acquire the talis. But if, let's say, for example, the seller pulled on the coin, that would not need to oraisa, that would not effectuate the transaction. Even though, says Reb Shimon, that is technically true, that the transaction is not finalized if the seller just pulled on the coin, but the buyer has yet to pull on the talis, but it's still considered problematic for either party to renege or recant, even if the transaction has not technically been finalized. And if either party backs out, they're going to be cursed with the Misha Para, which we've discussed already extensively this past week, right? This idea that Hashem is going to curse you into Dora Mabul and Dora Flaga, etc. But again, it's pretty clear from here that a person who doesn't live up to their word, who reneges and recants on verbal commitments, it sounds like it's a pretty terrible thing. So what right did Rav Kahana have to back out of his agreement? So the Gemara says, no, Tanaihi, this non. Maiseb Rabbi Yochanan ben Masya Sha'amar Livno, Tse Uschor Lanu Poalim, Halachu Fasak Lehem Mizonos. house. Uchsheba itzel aviv amarlo bini afilu ata oselahem kisuda shlomo b'shaito lo yatzasa yedecho vascha imahem. Shehin ben Avraham Yitzchak v'Yaakov Ela ad shelo yaschilu b'melacha tseiv emor lahem almenaz she'in lachem alai ela pas v'kitnes bovad. So the Gemara points out that this is actually a machlokas tanayim as to whether it's really so problematic to recant and to renege from a verbal commitment. The Gemara references a famous story about Rabbi Yochanan ben Masya and his son. Rabbi Yochanan ben Masya wanted his son to go hire some workers for him, and he told the workers that, you know what, in addition to paying you your regular wages, we're also going to provide food for you, we're going to provide meals for you while you're working. So the problem was is that he comes back to his father. His father says the following statement to him. He says, even if you had promised them that you're going to feed them like the suda that Shlomo HaMelech had at the height of his power with the most lavish types of food, that wouldn't be enough because they're Jewish people. They're the son, they're the descendants of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and therefore they deserve the best, the best quality food. But lemaisa, that's not what people do. You know, people don't typically provide their workers on a day-to-day basis with prime rib. You usually give them whatever, give them normal food. So basically, Rabbi Yochanan ben Masi said to his son that assuming that the workers have not yet begun working, they just basically committed or agreed to work, I want you to stipulate with them that I'm only going to feed them, you know, the basic staples. I'll give them bread, I'll give them beans, but I'm not going to give them these lavish feasts that they might otherwise expect. Now the problem is, says the Gemara, if you're going to argue like Rabbi Yochanan did earlier in the Gemara, that recanting from a mere verbal commitment is considered to be an act of bad faith, how could Rabbi Yochanan ben Masya tell his son to just, you know, to just change tunes all of a sudden? Say, oh, by the way, I initially promised you you're going to have whatever, you're going to have the best cut of steak every day, and I'm just going to feed you bread and beans. How could he change tunes like that? So the Gemara says, no, it's not. The Gemara says that story is not a raya. Shiny hasam defoalim gufayu lo samcha datayu my taima me deyade de alavu asamach. The Gemara says that the workers never really fully committed or believed that Rabbi Yochanan ben Masya's son was the one pulling the strings. They knew that Rabbi Yochanan ben Masya himself, the father, he was the one who was going to ultimately decide their wages and the food they were going to eat. They assumed the son was just reporting what their father had said over, and therefore they had not yet really committed themselves until they heard the words from Rabbi Yochanan ben Masya's mouth. So the question then becomes, afilu hischilu b'malachanami. The question then is, why did Rabbi Yochanan ben Masya only tell his son to add the stipulation that I'm only going to feed you bread and beans, only assuming that the workers had not yet begun working? Even if they had already begun working, presumably the same stipulation should apply, because presumably they're going to be reliant only on Rabbi Yochanan ben Masya, not on whatever his son said. So the Gemara says, no. Hischilu b'malacha v'adai samche datayu amru meimar amr kamei da'avua v'nechale. If the workers already begun working, that changes everything, because they're going to assume that Rabbi Yochanan ben Masya's son told his father exactly what the stipulation was, and that the father consented to it, the father agreed to it. So then they're going to be fully relying on the fact that they're getting these lavish meals, as opposed to just the bare bones minimum of bread and beans. That's why Rabbi Yochanan ben Masya specifically said to his son, only if they have not yet begun working, then you can add this stipulation. If they already begun working, so then they're going to assume that the father agreed to give them, you know, this more lavish food as part of their terms of employment. Okay, so asks the Gemara, Umi Amar Rabbi Yochanan.
Yes, sir, Billy. You would think that you're a worker, if somebody promises you lunch, you get what is customary for having lunch, not ridiculous weight.
Well,
I wasn't expecting to get cowboy steak, you know.
Correct. Well, that's basically the Gemara's answer, but again, I think it was probably hard to gauge at the time, you know, what was considered normal. You know, today, you go to a workplace and they're providing lunch, you have a pretty good idea what they're going to give you. You're going to get whatever, you're going to get a deli sandwich, you're going to get pizza. It's not, you know, there's only a few options of what you're going to get. It could be that back then things were, you know, varied. It depended on the wealth of the person who was providing it. You know, it could depend on a million different factors. And in theory, because they were, as he said earlier, they were descendants of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, they had the right to demand the best, most lavish food. But ultimately, you know, he, in other words, that's why he specifically had to stipulate that I'm only going to give you whatever is considered to be the norm. Okay, so asks the Gemara, Umi Amar Rabbi Yochanan Achi, the Ha'amar Rabba Bar Bar Chana Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Ha'omer Lachaveru Matana Ani Nosin Lecha, Yochol Lachzerbo, Yochol Pshita, Elo Mutter Lachzerbo. The Gemara says, is it really true that Rabbi Yochanan said that recanting on a verbal commitment is considered to be an act of bad faith? But Rabbi Yochanan himself said that, let's say, for example, Reuven commits to giving a gift to Shimon, so the Gemara says that Reuven is able to back out of that deal. So the Gemara says, of course he's able to back out. There was no kinyan. He just said, I'm going to give you a gift. So the Gemara says, no, it's mutter for him to back out, meaning it's not considered to be an act of bad faith to renege on the commitment to give a gift. So doesn't that contradict what Rabbi Yochanan just said? And the Gemara makes one qualifier here. Amar Rav Papa, umode Rabbi Yochanan b'matana mu'etes, desamcha datayu. Rabbi Yochanan will concede that if Reuven committed to giving a small gift to Shimon, so then he's not allowed to renege. If he reneges, that is considered to be an act of bad faith. What's the difference if it's a small gift or a large gift? Because a small gift, so the recipient, Shimon, assumes, okay, it's not such a tircha for Reuven to give me the $5 he promised. But if Reuven promised or pledged to give him $100,000, he's like, okay, you know what? He basically says, I'll believe it when I see it. He's not going to really assume he's getting that gift until it falls into his lap. If Reuven promised him something very, very minimal, so he's already reliant on the fact that he's going to receive that. In fact, the Gemara says, Hachi nami mistabra. The Amar Rabbi Avo, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Yisrael she'amar leven Levi, kor meiser yesh lecha biyadi, ben Levi rashai la'asoso trumas meiser al makom acher. The Gemara corroborates this statement, this halacha, with another statement of Rabbi Yochanan about the following case. Let's say you have a Yisrael who is in the process of separating meiser rishon from his produce. He says, you know what, I'm going to give my meiser to this particular Levi, to whichever Levi it is, and he says, I have a core of Meiser in my possession, I'm giving it to you. That Levi can rely on the fact that the Yisrael is going to live up to his word and actually give him the Meiser Rishon, and he can then turn around and use that Meiser Rishon that was committed to him to separate Trumas Meiser. And Trumas Meiser is the fact that even though when a Levi receives his own Meiser Rishon, he has to separate Truma and give it to the Kohen. So he can use the Meiser Rishon that was committed to him by the Yisrael as a way to separate Truma from his own produce and give it to the Kohen. So the Gemara explains, I amar pishlama lo mbatzi lemi hader bay mishum hachi rash. The Gemara says, I understand if you tell me that there's no way to recant, that once you made the verbal commitment, that's it. Once the Yisrael commits to giving the Maaser Rishon to this particular lady, that's it. He can't back out. It's an act of bad faith to renege. So it makes a lot of sense why the lady can say, okay, now I'm going to use this Maaser Rishon that was committed to me by the Yisrael, I'm going to use that to separate my Trumas Maaser to give to the Kohen. But if you take the other approach, like Rav said earlier in the Gemara, that reneging on a verbal commitment is not, you know, in other words, does not constitute an act of bad faith. So then, what right does the Levi have to turn around and take the Meiser that was committed to him by the Yisrael and use it to separate Trumas Meiser? The Yisrael could just as easily recant and renege and say, you know what, I'm going to give the Meiser Rishon to a different Levi. And if he does that, it's going to turn out that the Levi is going to end up eating Teva. So the Gemara says, no. This is very, very similar to an answer that we gave in the Gemara yesterday. The case was the following. The Yisrael took off the Meiser Rishon. He handed it to the Levi. So the Levi now acquires the Meiser, that first Levi that he committed to. But then the Levi said, listen, I'm going away on vacation for a few weeks. Can you watch the Meiser for me until I come back? So he handed it back to the Yisrael to watch as a shomer. So the Gemara says, in that case, he's certainly going to be the one to acquire the Meiser. So the Gemara said, hang on a second. Ihachi im aseifa. Nasno leven Levi acher ein lo alav ela taromes. Ve'isal kadaitach kagon shenaklu mimenu v'chazer v'hivkido etzlo amai ein lo alav ela taromes. Kevin demashchi mamona islegabe. The problem is that the Seifa, that same Brisa, makes the following observation. It says that, let's say, for example, the Yisrael, after committing to giving the Meiser Rishon to the first Levi, changes his mind and says, I'm going to give it to a different Levi instead. So the Brisa says that the original Levi, in other words, all he has against him is a grievance. He can yell, he can scream, he can shout, but he has no legal claim against him. But the question is, if what we just said a second ago is correct, that the Yisrael physically handed the Meiser Rishon to the first Levi, who then gave it back to him as a deposit, so then the original Levi already acquired the Meiser Rishon. Why does he only have grievances against the Yisrael? He should have a legal claim against him. He literally handed the Meiser Rishon over to him already. So the Gemara says, you're right. The only way to explain this is to say that the Yisrael has not yet given the Meiser Rishon to the Levi, and the only justification, in other words, and in that scenario, it's okay for him, or it's not considered to be an act of bad faith for the Yisrael to back out and decide to give it to a different Levi. And all the first Levi can really do is yell and scream and shout about it, but he can't really do anything beyond that. Okay, then the Gemara has another story. Hahu gavra diyohim zuzei ashum shemei l'sof yakir shum shemei. It's a very, very, very similar type of a story to the story we had earlier with Rav Kahana and the linens. There was a guy who was trying to buy sesame, and again, he paid X amount of money, and then the price of sesame increased. Hadru b'hum. So then the prospective sellers decided, you know what, sesame is much more expensive now, we're not interested in selling it, we're going to hold on to it until the price, you know, skyrockets. So they turn back to the buyer and say, you know, take your money back, we don't have any more sesame on us, right? They say, we don't have any more sesame, go and take your money back. So the Gemara says, the guy didn't take back his money, and ignov, eventually the money that was still sitting in the guy's, in the seller's house, got stolen. In other words, again, the sellers told them, take back your money. money. We're holding on to the sesame where we don't have any sesame, and the buyer never took the money, and then eventually the money got stolen. Asul kamei de Rava Amar le keva da amrilach shkol zuzach velosh kalis lo mi baya shomer sakar de lohave ela afilu shomer chinam nami lohave. Since the buyer, since the seller said to you, take back your money, and you failed to do so, not only is the seller not considered a shomer sakar for your money, he's not even a shomer chinam on your money, and therefore he's no longer responsible. Once he tells you take the money back, it's on you. Everything is off of his shoulders. If anything happens to the money, that's your problem. So Amru le Rabban and the Rava v'habay le Kabuli ale Mishapara. But what happened? In other words, what happened to the Mishapara that we've been discussing this whole week? Why isn't the seller slapped with a Mishapara for reneging on his deal? So he says, you're right. Amru lu hachinami. He says, you're right. Nechinami. In other words, the seller is going to be slapped with a Mishapara. We are going to, you know, utter a curse, you know, about him, that he should be cursed like the Dora Mabel, Dora Flaga. But at the end of the day, he can still recant, and his recanting and reneging from the deal is still considered binding. Amr of Papi, Amr li Ravina, Lididi, Amr li Hahume Rabbanan, Virav Tavos Shemei, Va'amrila, Rav Shmuel Bar Zutra Shemei, De Ihavu Yohave Le Kolcha Lola Da'alma, Lohava Kamishane Bidibure. So he was commenting, the Gemara says that Rav Papi was quoting Ravina, who said that there was this rabbi whose name was either Rav Tavos or Shmuel Bar Zutra, and even if the entire expanse of the world was given to him, he would never deviate from his words, he would never lie. In other words, he was considered to be a very honest individual. Bididi Hava Uvda, such an incident occurred to me. Hahu Yoma, Apanya Demali Shabsahava, it was Bein Hashmashos, an Erev Shabbos, Vahava Yasivna, Vasa Hahu Gavra Vikaya Bavi. He says, I was sitting by my house, and some guy came and stood by the doorway. Amar Li Islacha Shum Shamila Zabuni. He said, do you have any sesame to sell? So Amar Li said, no, I don't have any sesame. So Amar Li Lahavu Hanach Zuze Bifikadon Gabach to Hachashali. So this guy who walked into, you know, his house 5 minutes before Shabbos, he says to him, do me a favor, I want to deposit my money in your house because it's about to be Shabbos about to start, and I'm not going to make it home on time, so I want to use your house as a safe place to store my money over Shabbos. So Amr Lei, this either Rav Tavos or Shmuel Bar Zutra, whoever it was, says back to this guy, Habesa Kamach, Osvinu Bevesa Ve'ignu. So he says, my house is before you. That's all he said. My house is before you. So the guy puts the money in the house, and eventually the money gets stolen over Shabbos. So Asala Kamei Derav, Amr Lei, Kol Habesa Kamach, Lomi Baya Shomer Sachar Delohavi, Ela Afilu Shomer Chinam Nami Lohavi. So Rava said that the fact that Rav Tavos or Rav Shmuel said that my house is before you is a totally meaningless statement. He never committed to watching the money. He just said, feel free to put the money here. But he never said, I'm going to watch it for you. And therefore, not only is he not a Shomer Sachar, he's not even a Shomer Chinam, and therefore he has absolutely no responsibility for the fact that the money gets stolen. So Amri Lei, Vaha Amru Le Rabban and Le Rava, Yibai Le Kabule Ale Mishapara. Didn't we already establish before that you're going to be slapped with the Mishapara for reneging or recanting? The comment was that whole incident that we quoted earlier, the whole story about the sesame and the guy wanted to back out after the price of sesame increased, that whole story never happened. The whole incident was fabricated. It was all made up. So therefore, that whole idea that we quoted in the Gemara earlier, says Rav Tavos, again, who was considered to be trustworthy beyond the shadow of a doubt, never really occurred, never really took place, and therefore you can't bring me a raya from that story. Okay, then we said in the Mishnah, Rav Shimon Omer.
Yes, sir.
So we discussed this yesterday. We discussed this yesterday about whether a Mishapara is just informing the guy that you're going to get cursed or it's an actual curse that we give. That was a machlokas we had yesterday between Abaye and Rava about what the mechanics of a Mishapara are. But the bottom line is that if a person recants or reneges from his word in some fashion, he's going to either be informed that he's going to be cursed or he's literally going to be cursed, as we discussed extensively yesterday. Okay, so the Mishnah says, Rabbi Shimon Omer. Yeah, the question? So the Mishnah says, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Kol she'akesef yado yado al ha'elin. We mentioned a few days ago that according to Rabbi Shimon, whoever has the money has the upper hand. So what does that mean practically? So the Gemara explains, Tanya, I'm Rabbi Shimon. Emasai, bizman she'akesef v'haperos biyad mocher, aval kesef biyad mocher u'feros biyad lokeach, enu yachol achshavo, b'bnei she'kaspo biyado. Biyado, biyad mocheru, elo m'bnei she'demei kaspo biyado. The Gemara makes the following observation. We mentioned a few days ago that according to Rabbi Shimon, the seller is going to have the upper hand. Let's say, for example, he sold produce to the lokeach, to the buyer. He already received the money for the purchase, but he has not yet handed the produce over to the lokeach yet. And then the mocher decides, you know what, I want to back out of this deal. I'm not interested. I want to hold on to the fruit. I'm going to give you the money back. So we quoted Rabbi Shimon a few days ago and said, that's totally legitimate. The mocher has every right to that. Why? Because he's the one holding all the cards. He's holding the money and he's holding the produce. So if he wants to back out, he can. The lokeach is not holding any of the cards and therefore he has no right to back out of this deal. However, the Gemara qualifies Rabbi Shimon's statement and says, that which we said, that the mocher, the seller, has the upper hand, that's assuming that he's holding all the cards. He has the money in his hand and he still has the fruit in his hand. He has not yet handed it over to the lokeach. But if he's already handed the fruit over to the lokeach, so now the lokeach has the value of the money, the mocher has the money itself, so now the deal can no longer be recanted upon. So the Gemara says, of course not, pshita. In other words, the deal has been finalized already. If I buy something from you, and I receive the item, and I give you the money, so of course you can't recant. The deal's done, the deal's over. I could maybe resell it to you, but that would be considered to be like a separate deal. So Amar Rava Hacha b'mayaskinan, kagon shahaisa aliyah shel lokeach muskeres biyad mocher. Comes Rava with the following very creative okimta. The case is the following. The seller happens to be renting space from the buyer's attic. Why does that make a difference? Taima maita kinu rabana mashicha, gzeiro shema yomar lo nisrifu chitecha ba'aliya. Hacha birashuti de lokeach ninu, inafla de leka ba'ones, ihu tarachu maiseila. What was the reason why, according to Rabbi Yochanan, we discussed already the last couple of days, that Chazal instituted a takana de rabbanan of Mashiach? Again, remember, according to Rabbi Yochanan, there is no such thing as Mashiach mida oraisa. Mida oraisa, I pay money, I now own the item. Why did Chazal institute a gzera de rabbanan for Mashiach? Because we were afraid that if I bought the item, but I didn't pick it up from you right away, and a fire broke out, the seller would be disincentivized from salvaging the produce because it's not his anyway. So Chazal, in order to encourage the seller to salvage the produce, said that the buyer must do mashicha in order to acquire it. However, in this particular instance, where the seller is renting space from the buyer's attic, this gzera does not apply. Why not? Because the buyer himself is going to be incentivized to put out the fire if it's in his own house. He's not going to want his own house to catch fire. And therefore, this whole idea that we want to incentivize the seller to put out the fire to salvage the produce doesn't apply. The buyer himself is very much incentivized to put out the fire on his own house. And therefore, this whole gezeira is not going to apply in this instance. Finally, the Gemara has one last story on this topic. Some guy paid money to buy wine, but he heard that the people from the house of Parzak Rufila was he was like the vizier. He was like the one of the chief government officials in the Ottoman times, in the Turkish times, whatever it was. So basically, the people from his house were basically appropriating and seizing barrels of wine. So he bought wine. He realized that his wine was going to be seized from one of these government officials. So Amar Le, Havli Zuze, Loba Inachamra. So the guy who just bought the wine goes back to the seller and says, I want my money back. I'm not interested in the wine anymore. I don't want to have my wine appropriated by the guys from Parzak Rufila. So Asala Kamid Rav Chista, Amar Le, Kidera Shetiknu Meshicha B'mochrin, Kach Tiknu Meshicha B'lekuchas. Rav Chista, we actually referenced this statement a couple of days ago. Rav Chista said that just as Chazal instituted a takana of Meshicha for the sellers, they similarly instituted a takana of Meshicha for the buyers. Meaning, because the guy who committed to buying the wine, he paid the money for it, but he never did Mashiach, he never physically pulled on the wine, he is able to recant on his commitment. Because if he's afraid the money that the wine is going to be appropriated, he has every right to back out of this deal since he never did a Mashiach on the wine. Okay, says the Mishnah, Ha'unah arba'a kesef me'esu ve'arba'a kesef l'sela shtus l'mekach. This is the shita about Unah that we've alluded to already several times this week. This is the opinion of the Tanakam, the way that we paskin, which is that the shear of Unah is 1/6. If you overcharge someone for an item by exactly 1/6, that's ona'a, meaning to say that the sale is binding, but you have to return the overcharge of 1/6. If the amount that you overcharge is less than 1/6, then you don't even have to return the overcharge, even though it's still usher to do. If the overcharge is more than 1/6, it's a quarter, it's a third, it's a half, so then the entire sale is null and void. So we postulate the Tanakama that the shear is 1/6. The next question is in the Mishnah, an masay mutter lahachzir. The question is, how long do you have to recant from a transaction where ona'a was violent? I mean, let's say, for example, I bought an item from you 20 years ago and you overcharged me by 1/6. Can I come back 20 years later and say I want my money back or I want the transaction voided? So the Mishnah says no. Ad kidei she'ira l'tagar o l'krovo. You only have a very small window, which is the amount of time that it takes to show the merchandise that you purchased either to a merchant or to a close family, you know, relative who is well versed in business. So you basically have a couple of hours at most to show the item and to figure out whether you got ripped off. After that, the assumption is that you're waiving your right to any exploitation, any ona. This is all according to the Tanna Kamma. However, Hora Rabbi Tarfon Belud Hauna Shmona Kesef Me'esher VaArba Kesef L'Sela Shlish LaMekach. The Samchu Tagare Lud. So, however, Rabbi Tarfon in the city of Lud paskin that the shear of ona'a is much larger than 1/6. It's a third. You can, in other words, according to Rabbi Tarfon, you could potentially overcharge someone by more than a third of the value of the item, and that sale would still potentially be binding. Now, all the merchants in Lud Shmuel, says the Mishnah, were very happy about this because they felt they can get away with murder, basically. They could overcharge by up to a third and the sale would still be binding. However, Amar Lahem, Kol Hayom Mutar Lachzor, Rabbi Tarfon had one caveat to this, which is that although it's true that I hold, says Rabbi Tarfon, that the Shir of Onah is much larger than that of a Tana Kama, but I also have a much larger time frame in which the buyer can recant, as opposed to the Tana Kama, who said that the buyer only has those couple of hours to go and show his merchant friend or his relative the item. According to Rabbi Tarfon, you have the entire day. You have 24 hours, whatever it is. You have until Shkia. You have the whole day to go show, to go figure out whether you got ripped off. So Amrulo, so the merchant said, let Rabbi Tarfon leave us in our place. We'll go back to the words of the Chachamim. Meaning, they weren't willing to rely on this much larger share of Onav Rabbi Tarfon because there was also a much larger window of time in which the buyers could theoretically figure out that they got ripped off and they could claim their money back. Okay, says the Gemara Itmar. Rav Amar Shtus Mekach Shaninu, Ushmuel Amar Shtus Ma'os Nami Shaninu. The Gemara is a machlokas between Rav and Shmuel. What do we mean exactly when we're talking about Ona'a? What exactly is Ona'a? Is Ona'a the overcharge? We'll just call it a sixth because that's the way that we pass it. Is it a sixth overcharge on the actual market value of the item? That's the opinion of Rav. Shmuel says it's not only a sixth of the market value, but even a sixth of the amount of money that was paid as well. So the Gemara explains. The Gemara says, Shavei Shita B'chamsha, Shavei Shita B'shiva, Kuleyama lo pligi devasar mecha chazlinan ve'ona havyam. Everyone agrees that if you have a scenario, let's say you have an item that's worth 6 ma'ah and you sold it for 5, or it's worth 6 and you sold it for 7, so everyone agrees that you follow the market value of the item, and that constitutes ona'ah. That's considered to be an overcharge by more than a 6. Ki plige shavei chamsha b'shita v'shavei shiva b'shita. The machlokas is, what if you sold an item worth 5 for 6, or an item worth 7 for 6? L'shmuel da'amar basar ma'os azlinan idi v'idi ona'ah havi. According to Shmuel, who says that ona'ah doesn't merely follow the market value of the item, but the actual amount of money that you dished out for the item as well. So both of these cases will constitute ona'ah because the overcharge or the undercharge, depending on the case, is in fact more than a sixth. However, l'rav de'amar basar mekach azlinan, shavei chamsha b'shita bitul mekach havya, shavei shiva b'shita mechila havya. But according to Rav, who says that the only standard by which ona'ah is defined is not based on the amount of money that you paid, but rather based on the market value of the item, you have to distinguish between these two cases. Specifically, if let's say, for example, there was an item worth 5 that you bought for 6, so that's bitul mekach. The whole sale is null and void because you paid more than 1/6 of the value of the item. In contrast, in the reverse case, where an item that was worth 7, you bought for 6, that overcharge is less than a 6th, and therefore that sale is still going to be binding, and the assumption is that the buyer or the seller waives his right to collect the overcharge. Ushmuel amar ki amrina mechila uvitul mekach hecha deleika shtus mishnei tzadim aval hecha deika shtus mitzad echad ona'a havya. And Shmuel disagrees, and he says, when do we invoke this idea of mechila, of the buyer or seller waiving the right to collect the overcharge, or the idea of bitul mekach, if the overcharge was done by more than a sixth, that the entire transaction is null and void? That's only in a scenario where you don't have shtus mishnei tzadim. You don't have the overcharge of a sixth on both ends, meaning from the perspective of the market value of the item, as well as from the perspective of the amount of money that you paid. However, if you have an overcharge of a sixth from one side, from either the market value or the amount that you paid, according to Shmuel, that in fact does constitute ona. Okay, then we said tonight, ha'ona dalel kesef me esrim ba'arba kesef l'stela shtus l'mekach. This was the opinion of the Tana Kama. The Tana Kama told us that the shear of ona is a sixth. It's 4 out of 24. 4 silver ma out of 24 per sella. So my lav the zavin shave esrim the esrim varba ushmanina shtus maos nami shaninu. Presumably we're talking about a scenario where you bought an item that was worth 20, but you paid 24 for that. So that's considered to be more than a sixth. But you see that this Mishnah seems to corroborate Shmuel's position that the shear is based on the market, that is also based on the amount of money that you paid, not just purely based on the market value. Again, because the market value of the item is 20, you paid 24. So the only way to explain how that could possibly be ona'ah, seemingly, is to assume, like Shmuel, that the shear of ona'ah is also defined not just by the market value of the item, but also by the amount of money that you paid. To which the Gemara says, lo, the zavin shavei esrim va'arba the esrim. It's the reverse case. You bought an item that was worth 24, but you only paid 20 for it. Minasana mocher. Now, who is being exploited in that case? It's the seller. The seller is getting underpaid for the value value of the item. The problem is, says the Gemara, Ema Seifa, I must say, Mutter Lahachzir Bechdei Sheyirah Lesagar or Lekrovo. We also quoted in the Mishnah that you have a very limited time frame to back out of the deal and to invoke this idea of Ona'ah. In other words, you only have enough time to take the item to show it to a merchant or to show it to a relative who is well versed in business. However, the Amar of Nachman Lushanu El Lokeach, Avo Mocher Liolam Choser. Rav Nachman qualifies that statement. Rav Nachman says that when the Mishnah told us that you have a very limited time frame, you only have a couple of hours that it takes to show it to the merchant or your relative to figure out that you got ripped off, that's only from the vantage point of the purchaser, of the buyer. The mocher, the seller, he always has the right to recant. He always has the ability to back out and claim that he was underpaid, that he was cheated by the buyer. So the Gemara says, you're right. Ela dezavin shavei esrin ba'arba be'esrinu samanya. The case is that you bought an item worth 24 for 28. So in that scenario, you're able to invoke Onah, but again, the Gemara says that seems to prove Shmuel's position, that the shear of Onah is defined based on the amount of money that you paid, as opposed to just the market value of the item. And the Gemara goes to the next part of the Mishnah tonight. Hora Rabbi Tarfon Belud, ha'onah shmona kesef me'asrin v'arba kesef l'sela shlish l'mekach. Again, Rabbi Tarfon disagreed, and he says that the shear of Onah is in fact a third. So my lav d'zavin shavei shitzarei be'esrin v'arba u'shma minah shlish ma'us nami shaninu. Presumably, we're talking about a case where someone bought an item that was worth 16, he paid 24, that's an overcharge of a third, and the only way to say that Ona'ah was violated, again, is to invoke Shmuel's position that we keep on alluding to, that the shear of Ona'ah is defined by not just by the market value, but by the amount of money that you paid. And again, the Gemara rejects and says, well, the Zavin Shavei Esrin V'Arba B'Shitzar. It's the reverse case. You paid 16 for an item that was really worth 24. Minasana Mocher. And again, it's the seller who is exploited in this case. The problem is, Ema Seifa, Amar Lahem, Kol Ayom Mutter Lachzor, V'Amar Rav Nachman Moshanu El Lokeach, Ava Mocher Liolam Choser. Rav Nachman makes the same qualification that he made for the Tanakhama on Shmuel. The same way that Rav Nachman said, that according to the Tanakhama, when we talk about this small time frame to show it to the merchant or to the relative, that only applies to the buyer, not to the seller. So Rabbi Tarfon's larger time frame of the whole day also only applies to the buyer and not to the seller. And therefore, the seller can show, you know, in other words, he can claim Ona many weeks, months, years later as well. That would still be a legitimate claim. So the Gemara says, El dezavin shavei chavdala bislasin v'usrein. You have to say the case is that the guy bought an item worth 24 and he paid 32 for it. That's an upcharge. He overcharged him by a third. So in that scenario, we say again, it's going to be a proof to Shmuel's position that the shear of Ona'ah is defined not just by the market value, but based on the amount of money that you paid for the item as well. And finally, the Gemara says, Tanya Kivasi Shmuel, a price that corroborates Shmuel's position. Misha Hutal Alav, Yado Al HaElyona. Whoever gets exploited, whoever is the subject of the Ona'ah, they are the ones who have the upper hand. Ketzad. Machar lo shave hey bevav. Minasana lokeach. Yad lokeach al ha'elyona. So let's say, for example, the seller pulled a fast one on you. He sold you an item that was worth 5, but he sold it you for 6. So you paid more than a sixth of the value of the item. So in that case, you as the purchaser, as the buyer, got ripped off, and you therefore have the upper hand. What does that mean practically? Ratza omer tein li ma'osai o tein li ma'ashe unesi. So that means that you can decide if you want to nullify the entire transaction, or you could say, I'm going to keep the item, but I want you to return to me the amount that you overcharged me by. On the other hand, the Gemara says, machar lo shav v'sheish v'chamesh, minasana mocher. Yad mocher al ha'elyona. Ratza omer lo tein li mekhi, o tein li ma'ashe unesi. And you basically have the same in the reverse. If the buyer ripped off the seller and convinced him to sell him the item for 5 when it was really worth 6, so then the seller has the upper hand. He can either nullify the entire transaction, or he can say that the transaction is valid, but you have to pay me back the additional ma'a or sella that you promised or that the item was what was initially worth.